Hello, everyone, and welcome to Frontiers Podcast. I'm your host, Eden Cortez, assistant editor to Frontiers. Today, Frontiers, a journal of women's studies, is launching its first podcast session called Meet the Author, in which we have a series of conversations with authors regarding their forthcoming article in Frontiers and critical issues influencing their work. Today's conversation focuses on getting to know our guest, Eli Ehrlich, the author of a forthcoming article titled Technologizing Gender, Trans Youth Activism on the Internet. Eli is also a trans activist, writer, and scholar, as well as the co-founder of Trans Student Educational Resources, an online youth-led organization. Welcome, Eli. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I appreciated you being in this first podcast ever. Let's talk a little bit about the work you do and a little bit about yourself, so our readers could become a little more familiar with you and your work.
Absolutely. Well, I am the co-founder and director of Trans Student Educational Resources, an organization dedicated to transforming the educational environment for trans and gender nonconforming students through advocacy and empowerment. TSDR is currently the only national organization run by trans youth and the only one focusing on trans students. And along with this, I'm also a PhD student in feminist studies at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where my research focuses on contemporary transgender movements.
Okay, and how did you become involved with TSER?
Well, being a transgender woman, I had a lot of experiences of violence, especially after coming out at a very young age in the third grade to an extremely rural community in Northern California. I was immediately isolated and frequently threatened and beaten because of my gender. And so you can imagine how these experiences may make me want to seek community. Unfortunately, I was one of the first families in the area to have access to the internet. And so through that, I was able to form a community and help start actually an organization.
I think that's one of the, in your article, you definitely addressed this, and I think that's one of the things that really spoke to me in your article, the personal experience, the lived experiences as a trans youth in a rural town, right? Especially in a rural town where access to support community is very minimal. One of the things that your article talks a lot about is this role that the media, digital media, plays in creating access and community for trans youth, specifically those who are, geographically dispersed. Can you talk a little bit more about that in terms of what do you see currently, how social media, digital media, online presence is adding to critical conversations about trans youth in online.
Since TSDR was founded in 2011, there's been an explosion of trans communities and discourse online. I think that this has absolutely contributed to more trans people finding community and more trans people being able to actualize our identities. This is incredibly important to discussions about geographically isolated trans people as well. When I co-founded TSDR, I was the only trans person in my town that I knew of, and it was very isolating and difficult to be able to fight for myself. And so that's part of the reason why TSDR was also founded as a national organization, because we were able to reach these populations that wouldn't otherwise have support.
Great. Yeah, it's. I was able to go online and look at TSDR and the mission statement and the type of information and content that's being put out there, and it's amazing. I think it's one of the from what I remember your article saying, it's been widely used, right? And, trans youth are able to access information, also create community. So I think that's very important. One of the things that I would like to ask about your article is for you to share a little bit about what would you like our readers to take away from your article and issues that are important for our readers to engage with.
Well, really good question, and it also depends on who the readers are as well. Each individual should be able to take out something different from learning about the trans community. As far as the general population, it's really important to get educated on trans issues, and I think the internet is a really great place to do it. We are producing our own knowledge, which is a very unique aspect of the trans community, where very often in public discourse, historically, we've been overlooked, which does have its benefits. Visibility is not necessarily contingent with transgender liberation. And because we've been able to produce much of our own knowledge, many of our own identities and narratives, we are able to inform others about our community. So going on to websites run by trans people and getting educated on trans issues is the absolute most important first step to supporting transgender lives.
Great, thank you. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of important topics that the readers, depending on the reader, who the readers are, they should be able to engage with. One of the things that I also noticed is it's the key terms, a lot of the key terms that we're using, they really stuck out to me in terms of trying to understand and contextualize the use of some of the key terms. That when you talk about trans liberation, and what will that look like and what that should look like when you talk about transness. Those are key terminologies that maybe not your average reader who engages with, with any, who has, I guess, a lack of awareness when it comes to trans issues needs to engage with. What are some of the, possible advice that you could provide to those who are initially engaging with trans issues when they read your work?
I think it's very important to start at the basics, finding perhaps 101 guides on transgender language. So much of our community is uniquely formed around language itself, as our identities are very often derived from newer terms, like transgender itself, which didn't reach popularity until the early 90s. So beginning with language and moving from there into historical accounts of transgender issues is very important. And I know I know literature like Leslie Feinberg's books are available online for free. And so there's a lot of public information available on trans issues that could really help educate folks.
Great. And one thing you mentioned is, again, the current political context we find ourselves in and the importance of being educated on trans issues. Now, let's shift gears and talk a little about the current political context that we find ourselves right now, specifically with the DOJ's current move to exclude sexual orientation from Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. How do you see, and in what ways do you, as the trans community, online and offline, engaging and talking about this issue and addressing it in a scale where it becomes more visible for everyone that it's not fully aware of what's going on?
Well, of course, trans people are increasingly being targeted by the federal government for different types of persecution, ranging from a military ban to removing us from federal employment protections. And a lot of this is actually deeply related to the emergence of trans discourse on the internet. For transgender people, the boundaries between the virtual and physical become increasingly ambiguous. So, for instance, there are thousands of trans people who have crowdfunded their surgeries and transition-related healthcare online. Digital calls for support, in this case, can translate into life-saving medicine. And then conversely, in the context of the Trump era, the increased visibility of trans people and thereby transphobic rhetoric has also allowed the far right to latch on to the outrage related to our bodies, lives, and narratives reaching the mainstream. And so this is manifested in the targeting of trans populations from the government and various white supremacist movements around the country as well.
That's one thing that I find very interesting in terms of the way trans bodies have been I guess, the labels that have been applied in terms of looking at the military and this proposed ban of transgender folks from the military, and the issues around, well, at least for the far right, the issues they've been framing it, couching it under, is always around combat readiness, right? And the cost that it will, the cost of transition surgery to quote unquote, you know, the government or the American people. How would you speak back to this anti-transgender rhetoric coming from this current, you know, president's administration?
Particularly within the context of the military ban, there are different camps within the trans community, stratifying the conversation between what could potentially be pinkwashing and what could also look like a plan for transgender liberation. So what I mean by this is the widespread outrage about the trans military ban, mentioning how patriotic trans people are and how we should likewise be able to effectively murder people overseas in what Dress Repoir might describe as pinkwashing. And then there's the other camp, which is arguing that instead we should be focusing our resources on exclusively on the abolition of the military in its entirety. And so it brings us to this very contentious point within the community where there are a lot of different arguments going on and there's no cohesive movement that's actually working to protect trans lives here and overseas as well. So there's a lot of emergence of critical discourse as well as an increase in assimilationist discourse revolving around the current state of trans politics. And now, of course, the military ban very well might not be upheld, and this perhaps is best, this perhaps may be best remembered in the history of the trans movement as a test of our ability to resist assimilationist politics within our movement.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's very important to definitely engage in this conversation around the anti-transgender rhetoric coming from our government, but also more critically engaging with what does it mean to really create an environment, a supportive environment, and a cohesive organization, right, or coalition around trans movement. And I think that's one of the things that your article does really good at bringing up, the importance of creating a cohesive identity and being able to put all these all trans organizations in a place, in a communal environment, a place where the cohesiveness of their identities can move forward trans movement and also address issues from, you know, that are affecting the trans youth in today, contemporary America. Before we end our podcast, I would like to ask you if you have additional resources that you could suggest to our readers.
Well, for academic literature, Transgender Studies Quarterly provides some really excellent reading on trans issues in general. And then, of course, there's also Trans Student Educational Resources website at transstudent.org. The trans movement is one of the first in history that's been able to actualize their own identities online, where trans people, and particularly young trans people, are producing new identities as we are able to better discuss our own feelings around gender with one another.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Again, this was a podcast produced by Frontiers, a Journal for Women's Studies. My name is Eden Cortez, your host, and we just had an interview with Eli Ehrlich, who is the author of an upcoming article through Frontiers titled Technologizing Gender, Trans Youth Activism and the Internet. Thank you, Eli, for being here today.
Thank you.